Across Divides is a podcast that discusses challenges faced by communities around the island of Ireland. In this season, we speak with young people about what peace means to them over a quarter of a century since the signing of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. We discuss the challenges faced by present-day youth and the ways they're making their voices heard. In this episode of Across Divides, we're talking about youth voices, how they're represented across the island, and widening access for youth in the political discourse that directly affects them. We're with Olan Downey Reynolds, who works with Coraline Nogue as a youth leader in Boomerang Youth Centre, Drogheda, and lead coordinator in a community climate action project with Development Perspectives Adult Education NGO. We're also with Jessica Taggart, who is the Amplify Youth Worker for Youth Action Northern Ireland in the Northwest. She was also a part of the Shared Island Youth Forum in 2024. Nadia Matskevich is a student at Carrickfergus Grammar. She's finishing her GCSEs and is part of the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly and a 2024 ambassador for the I Will movement. Nadia, let's maybe start with you. I'd like to ask you about the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly because it has quite a broad access. Could you tell us about what age groups are involved, how it gives voice to young people? I know that you meet with MLAs and decision makers to discuss issues that might influence young folks.
So the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly is a collection of 12 to 16-year-olds from all around Northern Ireland, so all the counties. They're all spread evenly across. It's 90 members. How we amplify kind of youth voice is by giving them the option to voice their opinions in Parliament, specifically Stormont, for example, through debates. Recently, we did a debate against the mobile phones ban, which was then brought forward to the Minister of Education.
Could you tell us a bit more about the mobile phones ban, what that was all about?
So the mobile phones ban was basically put forward by the Minister of Education, putting a complete ban on mobile phones in schools and bringing in phone pouches. We argued that the ban could be sufficient. However, phone pouches was a completely ridiculous idea. I think it was proposed that £250,000 was put in for 10 schools to get these phone pouches, which was an extreme amount of money, you know, speaking of how bad the education system currently is in Northern Ireland for like therapy and for access to special education. We brought that forward. We debated it in the Stormont and it was all recorded and transcripted and then brought forward to the Minister of Education. Now, unfortunately, he didn't really listen and I think the bill still came on, but it was still brought forward to the Minister of Education as the voice of what young people thought about this ban.
So in this case, an issue was raised by young people and debated and brought forward, but it didn't receive a positive response. Jessica, you work in a youth organisation. I'm wondering whether you recognise a barrier between the voices of young people and the way that they're regarded in political discourse.
Definitely. I mean, like even hearing things like that, it's disheartening to young people. If they're hearing that, oh, we've done all this work and we've spoke to this minister and it's so amazing that you even get the opportunity to do that. But I'm just hoping that he took your opinions and took on all of your facts as much as he would any other consultant, because you were the main people that were going to be affected with that. In regards to like even getting young people to speak and have their voices, a lot of the time they're disheartened by other factors and feeling disempowered, because if we're chatting about education systems where they are constantly undermined or maybe told that they're not good enough in schools, then it projects into other bits of society and they're feeling undervalued. They're not going to be wanting to chat about whatever issues are important to them when they're not able to do it in places like schools. So our job then as youth workers is to really empower them young people and ask for their voice and give them the opportunities to speak like that. So for example, at Youth Action, last week we had our annual youth work review, and that means that any young people that was on our project are invited up to Belfast to chat to our youth workers about what they loved about the programme, but also what they would do differently, and just constantly consulting them wherever we can and trying to be as youth-led as possible. I do try and do it in my own work. My Amplify programme is up to 26-week long, and like they're not going to want to sit and listen to me for 26 weeks or my plan of 26 weeks. If young people are going to fully participate, then they need to be the decision makers at the very start. So I always get them to do nearly like a consultation before they even start of what do you want to do in this 6 months? Where, what direction do you want to do? Is there anything you want to learn about? And most importantly, what trips are you going to want to go on? Because then I can then organize from there.
So that kind of facilitation
is
really important in elevating youth voices. And you used the word even amplify to name the program, which is really indicative of what it's trying to do. I think there's a real difference here. And maybe, Olin, you can speak to this a bit from your background between debate, discussion, and actually turning that into something that creates tangible change. We're discussing earlier the difference between debate and deliberation. And I wondered if you could elaborate a little bit on that.
Sure, absolutely. If I might just first to respond to one of the two things that Nadia and Jessica have said, I think the amplifying voices is absolutely so important. And I think exactly in line with what you were saying about the youth assembly, the question is whether or not I think we're asking for young people's opinions as a tokenistic response to them not being involved in the political process, or if we're asking with legitimate concern and consideration. And I know Nadia would be very on the side of lowering the voting age. And I think that's one way that you can really do something, take an active step to do something along those lines. And then going back, as Jessica was saying, and consulting throughout the process and making sure that it's youth-led is showing that it's very clearly on the side of being legitimate concern and consideration as opposed to just tokenistic. From my side of things then, with the debating and deliberation, look, I mean, I've nothing against debating. I love debating. I ran a debating society in Maynooth for years. But I think that the value in debating actually comes from taking a side that you wouldn't pick yourself and seeing a different perspective, and then coming to kind of new revelations and conclusions at the end of that debate. And that's where the deliberation end of it comes in. I suppose intentionally, it's different when you deliberate because you're coming at it from a different point of view. You're looking to learn and you're looking to think. I think the Greek words for this is that you're coming at an argument from one of two standpoints, and that's either philosophia, which is to think, or philia nikia, which is to win, and it's about victory. And I think far too often, the older we become, the more important it is for us to win the argument, and the more biases or political parties or other things that we have to kind of placate to influence our decisions, as opposed to when it's coming from the voice of youth, they're thinking about what's right. They're not worried about some of the same concerns that older people are kind of worried about, I suppose. And I think there's a huge amount of value in that, because it's Naomi Klein that writes that climate change is a crisis of the imagination. And I think if there's one thing that young people have that older people don't, it's imagination.
You've touched on a couple of things there, Olin, that we're going to come back to. One is climate change, and it's an issue where young people are definitely seen as the drivers of change, but don't necessarily have the power or position to create the change that they're expected to. I'm going to come back to Nadia. You're not only part of the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly, but also the I Will movement, working towards societal action on issues faced by young people. Can you tell us about this and the connection for you between discussion and action?
Yeah, I'd say the I Will movement would be different from the Youth Assembly, because the I Will movement is a collection of people from all around the UK, not just Northern Ireland. And it kind of gives people from, I think it's 10 to 26, so a wider age range of opportunity to promote their social action. I know in the Youth Assembly, it's more tied down to three committees, rights and equality, education, and I think health. The I Will movement is generally anything you want, any kind of social action you would want to promote. I know people are, for example, campaigning for disabled rights or rights for the LGBT and for LGBT youth. For me, in the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly, I am in the Rights and Equality Committee, and we are currently doing on women. In the I Will movement, I'm doing differences in cultures in Northern Ireland and throughout the UK, so promoting kind of community. In the Northern Ireland Youth Assembly, it's more politics-based. It's more based in, say, the chambers. However, I'd say the I Will movement's kind of more networking and getting to know people and getting to bring your opinions forward to anybody, for example, through traveling to events or even meeting people online.
it's really good that the I Will ambassador isn't as political. It's important to know that not all young people are politically driven. And a lot of them, it bores them, especially in Northern Ireland, because there's such a link to party politics. A lot of them feel like they can't get involved in a social issue because a certain party with a certain question, whether it's nationalist or unionist, they don't know whether to get involved in that way. So it's nice getting involved in issues rather than party politics. And it's so important.
You raise an interesting point there, Jessica, where people feel that their issues can't be brought up in the general political discourse because of party politics. I wonder if we could go back to the Shared Island Youth Forum here as a space that might avoid those kinds of dynamics, and how these kinds of forums raise the voices of young people. If these sorts of opportunities allow their voices to be heard, or are they just shouting into a void of discussion and debate with no tangible outcome?
Well, the Shared Island Youth Forum completely avoided them party politics. It spoke a lot on sections instead. So opportunity, sustainability, equality, health and well-being, and culture and identity was the five strands. Because of that, like, even if someone wasn't politically minded, they were still able to get involved. They could be like really passionate about culture and identity, or like we were talking about it at a grassroots level. Politics was definitely needed, but it wasn't needed right there and then. It needed to be talked about with people that were doctors and nurses, for example, in health and wellbeing. And yes, we needed policymakers there, but we also needed youth workers there to kind of aid the conversation in that way. Shared Island Youth Forum was amazing. It was definitely revolutionary in the way that we were chatting North and South divides, but there's definitely more that we could do. And there was barriers to it. Definitely not everybody like feeling they had the confidence to have their voices heard. And then also the problem of it was 18 to 25 year olds. So then you've got a big gap of young people that haven't had their voices heard before then. So why would they do it now at 18 if they aren't being told, like the Youth Assembly, from a young age that your voice matters? Then how are you expecting them to do it at 18?
Let's pick up on that point. Olin, you work with transition year students who are in a similar age group to what Jessica's just described. You said that they have great ideas but no right to vote. Do they feel disempowered about the issues that are important to them and which directly affect their lives?
Absolutely. The response that I got, this is only my first year running a quarterly group, but the response that I got towards asking this group of students in Drogheda towards what they thought the biggest problem in Drogheda was and how to solve it, they could very quickly identify what the problem was. And unfortunately, the problem was drug and addiction related. The solution, however, was far more difficult because they were able to very quickly and succinctly say, what we need is a rehabilitation centre. But there was no way, due to power, politics and money, that they were going to be able to provide that. So what you've got is a situation there where young people can see a problem and they see the solution, but they don't see the solution coming into play from the people that have the responsibility and the power to make that happen. And yet they don't have that power. So what you get as a result, I think, is a lot of disenfranchisement and a lot of bad reputation and stigma associated with things like politics. And then you have people throwing away the word politics before, I suppose, they even start to realise all of the issues that are intertangled with it. And then it becomes a far less accessible and far less appealing subject for young people. So I think it's really important as youth workers and as educators to continue to, well, to promote GCE, Global Citizenship Education, along the lines of things like sustainability, equality, and a lot of similar actual things that you were talking about in the Youth Forum, Jessica. A lot of those things are pillars of Global Citizenship Education. And what it really aims to do is just foster this sense of a global community, that we are a global community that has global challenges to meet along the lines of inequality and climate change, and that we need to be able to enable and mobilize young people's passion, imagination, and innovation in order to actually meet those challenges together. And breaking down divides, I think, is a really important first step to that.
You've mentioned global citizenship education there, and also very specific issues in Drogheda. We've talked about climate change already, and there's a mantra in the climate conversation, which is think global, act local. How do we draw connections between global issues and local issues, things like mental health and climate change, and where does youth work fit in?
you have so many different aspects to this, and you can get really deep and complicated with it. But at a base level of global citizenship education and things like climate change, it's all of the people in the world trying to solve the world's problems. And I think there's a real beauty to that because it supersedes any divides of religion or race or anything. But you can go all the way down to the individual. And I think it's really important for grassroots and community level organizations to come up and meet that in the middle as well as politics and other sort of national initiatives and policies. Something that I do with my youth group is Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey. And that's really individual basis. It basically takes the individual through any sort of a main character story, be it Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker in Star Wars. And basically they have to transfer into this world of the unknown where they're out of their comfort zone and things are scary. And then they come back with a lesson. And a key part of that is that they then share that lesson with the rest of the group. And that emboldens and strengthens the group, and then they learn, and then hopefully there's some sort of a result of an action project in there as well. That's the base that I try and push it in the core UNO group. So I guess then what you've got after that is you've got a group of people that are mobilized, they're passionate, and they're enabled. But the problem, I think, is that at that point in Ireland, it tends to fizzle out a lot. It loses funding. The youth work sector is massively underfunded, which is a huge issue across both sides of the country. And then it fizzles out. So you have these great grassroots initiatives and organizations, and then they don't get the funding to network and create a bigger sense of there are things happening, there are people out there doing good work.
It really seems like there's a lot of momentum and energy for action in youth work, and that needs more support. One of the visions of opportunity on the outcome statement from the Shared Island Youth Forum was to increase funding for youth work across the island to facilitate greater provision of programs and targeted interventions to support young people. And our conversation so far has really given substance to that point. We've talked about some of the issues that young people are attempting to address and the pathways that are there, as well as some of the barriers for having their voices heard in political spaces. Could we just take a step back? And Nadia, I'd like to ask what it actually is that inspires you to take specific action through youth work.
It definitely depends on the person's like personal experience. I say, because my main social action is improving cultural differences in Northern Ireland. So I grew up in a Polish family, so a Polish immigrant family, and I always felt different from the other kids. When I was growing up, a lot of people were extremely discriminative to Polish people and just immigrants in general. So definitely just growing up with that kind of experience of being bullied for having a different culture and identity definitely pushed me towards that kind of social action. But I know, for example, let's say one of my friends is disabled and she pushes towards more education, for example, sign language being taught in schools throughout Northern Ireland, or one of my friends is fighting for LGBT rights as a trans person. So it definitely depends on that kind of person and what kind of issues they believe they really wish to fight for.
It sounds like there's a lot of responsibility on young people to take action on these issues. Is there enough support there, Jessica, to prevent burnout?
Burnout of activism is such a big issue. I would love to say as a youth worker that we do like specific youth work where we have young women's groups and we chat about them rights. And Weller, we have just recently, I did an autism friendly event called NeuroChat. A few of my colleagues, so we brought young people from Belfast up to Derry, and we're going to do the same next month. We're going to bring people down to Belfast. And these are young people that would find public transport really intimidating, and chatting to people, it's just like letting down them barriers. But it can be exhausting doing specific youth work, and it can't always be done. So I think it's just important to be doing youth work on allyship and teaching. A lot of the time when I first came on to Youth Action, I came on as a peer researcher on altruism, and that's basically just being kind. And if you teach that from a young age and teach things like allyship and compassion, then these issues wouldn't have to be put up the good fight for trans people when you are a trans person yourself and are usually trying to stay out of the limelight but have no other option because trans rights are under such attack, for example. But even similarly, women's rights or anything like that, it shouldn't just be women on that front. It should be everybody. And trying to convince everybody is kind of the job of the youth worker in that sense.
I'm really getting a picture here of how the role of the youth worker is to mediate in this way and raise the voices of young people so that their issues are represented. Nadia, I know that you would argue that if young people are so well informed on the issues that are affecting them and want to have a voice, why not give them the right to vote?
If I was just to generalize it, just to one simple statement, the youth are the future. There's no other way to put it. If we don't have the opportunity to vote for what we want, then how is that going to help us in the future? If we are waiting until we are 18, for example, and I know that nowadays, if you look at the statistics, a lot more young people are voting because they see the importance of being able to decide their own futures. So I know a lot of people would say, for example, 16-year-olds are too immature. They can't vote because they'll make stupid decisions. But in my personal belief, I think it's more at fault of the education system. And I vote for Vote 16. However, I also vote and campaign for being properly taught your political options in school. A lot of people don't know who they should vote for. A lot of people are influenced by their parents, for example, or by their friends or peers. So I believe having kind of the opportunity to be taught, these are your options, these are all the things they are promoting, and go and vote. Because again, the youth for the future, and if they don't have the opportunity to vote for what they want, then why?
Olin, would you agree that the right to vote would empower young people under the age of 18 in a positive way?
I definitely think it's an empowerment question. And I definitely think, as Nadia said, that it's a question of education as well. Like, I mean, the responsibility lies with the voter when they have the vote. If they don't have the possibility to vote, then you're taking that away from them. And I know plenty, you might say that like 16-year-olds are immature. I know plenty of 25-year-olds that are immature and know nothing about their political situation and yet take a vote anyway, because that's what their parents, grandparents, grandparents voted back in the day. So what we need is more kindness, what we need is more inclusion, and what we need is definitely more unity. And I think, as Jessica said, once you have kindness and inclusion, a lot of these social divide problems that we have tend to fall away, and we get more unity consequentially and can start to look at the big issues that face all of us equally, as opposed to splintering us into different groups.
I would just say the responsibility of paying taxes, the responsibility of being able to work. If you have a national, if you have a national insurance number, why do you not have the right to vote? And even the fact that like you drive at, I know it's 17 instead of 16, but you drive at 17, you pay taxes at 17, you have to pay all these. Do you know what I mean? I was always an advocate for votes at 16. So it's so nice to see it finally being taken seriously. And you see so many examples all over Europe of it happening.
So I'm just taking a look here. In Scotland, at the age of 16, young people can take part in parliamentary and local government elections, but they have to wait until they're 18 to vote in UK parliamentary elections. Other countries that have lowered the voting age are Austria, Malta, and Slovenia. They carry some conditions, and in Germany, young people can vote in some local and state elections.
Scotland have done it. Take example. And I'm sure.
It's nice that young people just generally get the opportunity to even vote for their local councils. Like, that's a step forward in the right direction one way or another.
Yeah, definitely. And education wise, like, I remember we had one assembly and it was for sick form. It wasn't for anybody. It was like, oh, if you're over 18, this is how you vote. And it was one assembly and it was 10 minutes. And even like when there was elections happening, and I remember a few of my friends, now I'm in the younger age group, I was 17 at the time, and I seen them reading a few manifestos, and I didn't even realise you could do that. Like, that's how undereducated I was about political systems. So yeah, it's so important to be doing it.
One of the main discussion points of this podcast is that there is an entire generation now of young people who were born after the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, which was one of the most significant political decisions taken in recent decades. For a generation who are now at the age where they are becoming socially and politically active, what relevance does the agreement have for them?
The Good Friday Agreement, a lot of people are disconnected from it nearly, and there was things that were said in the Good Friday Agreement that still haven't been done. And I think because of that, young people are feeling a bit disconnected. And a lot of the times, young people don't even know, some young people don't know what the Good Friday Agreement was. So I spoke last year at the John Hume Foundation's talk, but it was all young people that did history and did politics. And again, it's all in things of young people being politically driven. It's not taught for something that was so, it wasn't that long ago. It was only 25 years ago. And it should be spoke about more. But a few of the things that haven't came up in the Good Friday Agreement was like an anti-poverty strategy still hasn't been done. And it's okay to say, like, we're very privileged that we live after the Good Friday Agreement and we don't live in this conflict that we used to. But that doesn't mean that we can't critique the things that were done before. You'll find in areas that maybe might have higher levels of sectarianism might know a little bit about it, but again, it might be the versions of their parents, grandparents. It's everybody's truth, isn't it? It's just everybody's perspective.
I know that, like, in my experience, until I think I was like 14 or 15, and I'm 16 at the minute, I really didn't know much about the Good Friday Agreement. It was only taught, I think, history year 11. So the people who, well, didn't get the opportunity or didn't choose history, and they were, for example, like a family of immigrants, they would have never known about the Friday Agreement. Obviously, it's more, they assume, schools assume that kids know what the Good Friday Agreement is from their parents. Mm. But obviously, it still needs to be taught in the education system properly from a younger age. But that's just my perspective.
It's interesting that the Belfast Good Friday Agreement is taught as part of history when it still has such relevance today. I'm wondering, with regard to other significant social issues that affect young people, do you find that you're equipped for your education to be able to engage with issues that affect you directly, things like mental health, climate change, housing, employment, and politics?
Not at all, honestly. Most of the young people I know who join these kind of organizations always learn it themselves, not through the education system, because they're extremely unprepared. For example, a lot of schools just focus on your primary education and, you know, getting you sent off to uni and getting you sent off to A-levels, and never kind of the bigger issues surrounding young people, such as politics. So I know in my experience, most young people had to teach themselves about the kind of options they have and the kind of also organizations. I know some schools try and promote organizations such as the Youth Assembly, but most schools just don't really bother anymore, I'd say.
Okay, so where do young people get their information from to be able to take part in these discussions?
Usually online. I think now a lot more people are looking towards like online forums and online, let's say, Instagram accounts, for example, looking into the kind of options they have. I know there's some, for example, like WhatsApp groups, just bringing people who are interested in such as youth action and sending out links and sending out these kinds of organization applications. But I'd say instead of school, most people go towards the internet nowadays.
The times have changed so much since the schooling system was set up to have this like factory streamlined set of workers. We know this is how the system was set up. And we know that like the mass majority of people don't work in factories anymore. It's all automated work. But then you go one step beyond that. And even this like rail track of primary school, secondary school, and that was a little bit different in Northern Ireland, but then like college and then a good job. That's absolutely gone in our part of the country for sure. And it's moving is pushed out to getting a master's as well on top of that. But inevitably, like, I mean, none of those things actually connect with people and engage them about what they think about the real world, how to critically analyze like their communities, the problems that are within them, and what they're teach them to be passionate about things that they want to go out and have a positive impact on, rather than just teaching people to be really good at a service or product industry job and suppressing their ability until they're 18 to be able to actually take part in political voting. And then at a younger age, to not have them informed about anything. It feels like it really harms the legitimacy of our democracy if we don't have informed citizens that are actually able to participate in it, you know?
I would add, like, I think it's a lot to do with the fact that they're so exam orientated, like you were saying as well. It's just like, oh, we need to get our grades up and we need to have the most attainment. Like sometimes it'll come to results day in August and I know I'll see local schools being like 99% of our students are A star to C. Like it's the most important thing. And there's so much importance and value held in academic validation. And that's because like schools are just so like critical of young people because of that. I think it's so important that young people during the transition year, I know very little about it, but we work with a group in RFO that are currently on their transition year. And I just think it's so important for young people because it gives them that pathway or at least that year to have the opportunity to go out to their community to learn more. I don't know if you can maybe elaborate a little bit on what the transition year actually is, because like, I only know a tiny little bit about it, but I think it's so important and I'd love to do it in the North. It'd be a nice break from GCSE. It's between junior cert and leaving cert.
It is, that's right. Exactly. Okay. So of the 5-year course, then you just slot this in as the fourth year and it would become 6 years. So it's quite in the middle of what we'd have as the junior cert and the leaving cert. And it is all based around experiential learning, community learning. And it used to be more in relation to like work experience and things like that, and maybe slightly different subjects like film studies. But in line with that, it used to be an optional thing that not that many people did. And now it's becoming something, certainly in my part of the country anyway, that almost everyone is availing of because of the fact that they get to go outside of the rigid system of education and learn about all these different things. And an awful lot of the time, I think transition year students experience lifelong lessons and learn lifelong skills in that year that like they don't learn the entire way throughout the schooling system otherwise.
The idea of a break before going into your A-levels, like I found A-levels so much more difficult than uni.
Yeah.
So much more difficult.
And exam stress is such a big thing. It just doesn't suit the mass majority of people. But then when you look at any of these massive social actions that are happening, like they're not exams.
No.
They're projects. They happen over the course of a long period of time and they need passion. And they, if you want to take a break and you're not feeling it that day, you can sit out and come back to it. And that's so important because we're humans at the end of the day. You know what I mean? The expectation for someone to just go in and perform memory acrobats and that's going to be what dictates their life after that is just absolutely insane.
Nadia, I think it's worth pointing out that you're about to take your GCSEs and you've come in here today to speak with us about issues that are important to you all the same.
It's a struggle, honestly. And this season, we call it coursework season because it's the season where all art and technology and HE, all courseworks are due after Easter. So it's an extremely kind of busy time, but I just find it that I can kind of manage that. But I know definitely education might be a barrier for some people who want to get into social action because they just don't believe they have the time or the energy even to come and talk to people about this.
The school system and the education system is to have a better economy. Like that is their main goal. And because of that, there's so many issues in the education system. Young people are constantly told that STEM subjects are exactly what's needed. And if you do social sciences, like if I had been told about any of the things that you're doing right now, not at like youth assembly, anything like that, it would have been so amazing. But instead we were constantly taught like to make sure we have maths and make sure we have like all these sciences, like you were saying.
Throughout this discussion, it's been clear that there's a gap between the education of young people and their abilities to engage with the wider political discourses that affect them. We've looked at lowering the voting age as a means to addressing this gap, but it seems for now it's the role of youth work to make that connection, and that's something worth investing in.
There's so many small initiatives and there's so many large overarching systems of oppression where a lot of them aren't connected in the middle ground. And I think that's a serious thing that we need to look at. It's putting youth leadership into areas where youth is needed, where youth is very centric, like the education systems. Like, why, for example, is there no feedback system in schools? Why is there no discussion about lowering the voting age? Why is there none of these things? Because they're not youth-led.
Right, what's your go-to icebreaker game?
Mine's usually just like going around the table, introducing yourself, like saying where you're from. I do like crazier icebreaker games, but they all just like kind of slip out of my mind always. Because always the main events kind of what sticks in my head.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
The gravity stick is literally just a stick that you put across however many is in the group's fingers that are like pointed out, and it has to rest on top of all of their fingers, and somehow they have to get it to the ground without dropping it. Now, what happens with kids is that they'll do this in 30 seconds flat, and with adults, the stick goes up. You just cannot bring it down collectively. It's a brilliant one to do by Paris, and I really enjoy doing that one.
Why is that? Is there some like psychological reason behind why adults do that and kids don't?
Just better group skills in games.
Okay.
You know what I mean? There's always one adult leader trying to take the rein and go like, no, watch this. And then they push it up. And then someone else is like, no. And then they keep on pushing it up. Whereas with kids, I think they're all like, okay, everyone just bend their knees right now. And they're like, yay. And then they do it and it's done.
How about you, Jessica?
I quite like human knots because it kind of just gets everybody together. Obviously, couldn't do it as much during COVID times, but just basically everybody's in a circle and they grab a hand and another hand and they have to try and then get out to like a full circle. Is that the description of a human knot? Like, I don't know how to explain. But if you really want to spice it up, you would have two separate groups and have them competing against each other. That's usually the way it goes, and add a little bit of competition to it.
Thank you for listening to Across Divides. If you would like to learn more about the project, go to icommunityhub.org. iCommunity is a collaborative all-island project run by The Wheel and the Northern Ireland Council for Voluntary Action. It is supported by the Department of Foreign Affairs Shared Island Civic Society Fund and the Shared Island Unit in the Department of the Taoiseach. This series was created thanks to the collaborative efforts of the National Youth Council of Ireland and Youth Action Northern Ireland. Thanks also to the Shared Island Youth Forum and to all of the guests who took part in the podcast.